Welcome, everybody, to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined, as always, by Zachary Turcotte.
What's up, my friend?
You are a diehard if you are joining us this week. Team FGI, we are headed to Mexico. We leave the California swing, go international for a week before we hit the Florida swing. But as you would expect, with a couple elevated events the last couple of weeks, don't have much of a field this week. So if you're joining us this week, you are truly a diehard. And if you're a diehard, be sure to check us out, fantasygolfinsider.com. If you're not a premium member already, get on board. We have the best research tools available in the industry. You're going to need them all this week, Zachary, when you're digging up guys in that 7 and 6K range. You're going to need every ounce of information you can drum up. So be sure to check us out, fantasygolfinsider.com. Before we dive into this week's Mexico Open, Zachary, let's talk about what was, so far this year, my favorite event. I found myself watching the most of any event so far this year. It's very entertaining coming down the stretch, both Saturday and Sunday. It turns out that if you have the best players playing a really good course, it makes for good watching. Who would have thought?
I know. It's been upsetting that Torrey Pines has been so overlooked in recent years. I mean, they had the U.S. Open, and I just figured for sure it would be hosting signature events pretty much every year, because it's obviously it's one of the most beautiful courses you're ever going to see there by the Pacific Ocean, and it's incredible as far as how much it's going to challenge players. Yes. I mean, it's really,
yep,
you're really going to have to play your best game all the way through. You're going to have to fight through every single hole. There's no freebies that are out there. Even the par fives are going to make you work. So, you have to be on the absolute cusp of the best of your game in order to succeed there. You know, you see the winning scores that they did actually get to, you know, minus 12, which, hey, that's not bad, but it offers a little bit of scoring there, but definitely nothing on the extreme side like we see at the, you know, the first few weeks of the year where guys are in the minus 20s, minus 30s to open the season. I don't get into those nearly as much as a course like Torrey, where you got to work for every golf shot that's out there. So, yeah, I thought it was fun. Looked like Maverick was going to storm back and take it yesterday, and he really just had one bad shot the whole day. On 14, you know, the one hole where he had his bogey was in the fairway, just pitching it in and ended up missing the green. And then it led to his bogey. And that was, you know, he pars the rest of the way. I mean, he fought pretty well to make par on 17, 18 hurt him, a bad wayward tee shot there on 18. I guess you could say two bad shots. So yeah, he went way right there.
Yep. That killed him.
Still had a decent look on for birdie on 18. Just missed that putt probably by about an inch. Broke just a little bit more to the left than he thought. Still played just amazing. And then you get Ober, who killed so many of us just a couple weeks ago.
Oh God.
That's just so typical for fantasy golf. Yep. I mean, it really is. It's just one of those games where he was so on the first day, and then he somehow over the weekend, he comes down with some kind of illness, which really took him down for like 10 days. You know, he lost a bunch of weight. He was awful at Pebble Beach the next week, and you're thinking, oh, is he back? Is he fine? We played out of his mind on the back nine yesterday. I mean, to birdie three in a row and then birdie on 18, you know, pretty impressive. Once Maverick was like three clear of the field, I thought, oh, this is over. There's just not enough scoring holes left for anybody to make a real charge. So to make up three holes and then to win it on the last hole there with a pretty clutch final putt there. Very impressive finish. definitely a guy that everybody's really known about for a while. Not really any real surprise that he wins. You're just seeing one of the top young players on tour who's I think, probably in for a very big season if he's healthy now, I guess. And I think that'll probably be the first of many times that we see him on Sunday competing to win big tournaments this year.
Yeah, a bit frustrating because I was very high on him for the Farmers. I thought his game fit so perfectly there, and then that soured me a bit. I will say, though, I finished 50th in the $200 single entry without him my lineup, which is pretty crazy. There was like over 1,000 people in that contest, and
yeah,
to finish that high without the winner is pretty unusual. So,
yeah, it wasn't bad. Rough week for me. I kind of figured if I went for the cash savings, really Scotty and Rory both ranked pretty closely in my model for the week. And I just thought, well, if I'm going to save 1500 or so with Rory, I'm just going to do that. And then I'll roll at other spots. And of course, Rory was just awful on Sunday. I mean, he was
falling back Saturday.
Saturday. He started falling back Saturday. It looked like he was going to make a little charge on Sunday and then did not. So that was, you know, that certainly hurt a little bit there. Then a couple other, I had two guys in my lineup miss the cut, which in a 70-man field where only like 15, 18 guys miss the cut is not great. So Sepp Straka was one I thought, oh, I can actually was able to find room to get him into my lineup. And of course, I mean, he's one of those guys who tends to run hot and cold, but he'd been hot for all five events so far this season. I was feeling pretty good about his game, and that hurt me. And then Gary Woodland, I thought maybe I could get some good savings by paying down for him. And he was also miserable and a complete non-factor for the week. So wasn't good for me on the cash side of things, but it was still a pretty good tournament overall.
Yeah, loved it. So now we move to Mexico, and we got Vedante World. What is this, like Disney World now, or is it Vedante World? I thought it was Vedante Vierta, but I guess they're
called Vedante World. I just refuse to use the long part of the name. It's just the Mexican Open. That's it. Like I'm not doing it. I have no interest in the Mexico Open at Vedanta World. No, stop. Just quit it.
This course has been played three times. The three winners have been John Rahm, Tony Finau, and last year, Jake Knapp. So I tend to lean toward drivers typically on this course. The rough isn't really that bad. 7,400 yards. It plays as a par 71. Greg Norman design. Fairways are actually pretty wide too, so they're very forgiving. Two bombers. Got the Paspalum greens this week. I usually use comp. You can go a couple of different routes with the comp courses. You can go kind of the resort tropical courses like Puerto Rico and Bermuda and Punta Cana. You can also, I've mixed in a couple others just to test them, like Detroit. I use Houston. I've used because there's been some crossover on the leaderboard. Other than that, it's not a strong field. Anything else on the course, Zachary?
No, those are about the same courses that I had. I used most of the coastal and resort courses for the week. So, and that gives you a pretty good feel for which guys have typically had success. The only trouble is you don't get a lot of rounds as far as the strokes gained numbers, because some of these courses that they play on don't have any strokes gained data. So
right.
You're dealing with a little bit of a limited number. I mean, some of these guys will get up into the 20s as far as the number of starts, but not that many, especially because we don't have a ton of veterans. One of the things that you'll notice this week about this particular field is in addition to not having a ton of star power at the top, we don't really have a ton of, we don't even have like that many good players that would normally make up like that middle range from, you know, that mid 7K to about 9,000 range. We usually have decent depth, or we've had decent depth so far this season filling that out. We don't really even have that this week. There's a lot of what I would call pricing pressure from below, pushing names way up that would normally be, you know, in the mid to low 7Ks, now making up the low to mid 8K range.
Up top, Akshay at 10.7. At 10.2. Rasmus Højgaard at 10.1. That's our 10K range this week, Zachary. And I was going back and forth as to if I wanted to roster Akshay or not.
Yeah.
And I started by saying, you know, I've had some luck fading the top price guy this year so far. Usually it's high price, high ownership. But this week, even though I wanted to fade him, I don't think I'm going to, because this is one of those weeks where I don't think he doesn't need to win, and he doesn't even probably need to be top three, just because the leaderboard is going to be so crazy up top. I think if you get a steady performance from him, and he is one of the most talented in the field, clearly, if you get a top 15 out of him, I think you'll be just fine.
I would agree with that. The other area that, you know, that we want to probably look at there with Akshay is, for a long time, until really probably like the last season or so, our sort of running joke with him was that you play him when you get to tropical courses. You know, that's kind of been where he's had the most success, not just on like the PGA Tour, but even back in his Korn Ferry days. So it's been, you know, some of the spots where he's played the absolute best throughout his career. So, and even recently, like look at the Hero World Challenge, he had a fourth place finish there. They finished last season, he was 13th and 14th in Hawaii. The year prior to that, let's see what kind of results we pop up for him there. I know I think he won in the Bahamas a couple times. He's got a second at Puerto Rico, a fourth in Mexico. So he's, you know, a 10th down at the Worldwide Technologies, 20th down in Bermuda. So for a long time, those have been the best spots for him to play. And now he's actually coming in. He had a nice finish this last week. I really liked him a lot at the Farmers, and he finished 9th there. I haven't been that impressed. Like, if you're going to pivot there, you know, Kiriyama is not going to have a whole lot for ownership, but I mean, you're really just hoping that he very suddenly and very quickly turns it around after four very mediocre starts so far in 2025. So I don't know.
Unlike in stacked fields, if you pivot off of Scotty, pivot off Scotty or something like that, it's going to be to another guy up top.
Yeah.
But here, you know, here it's like, is Kiriyama going to win it if Akshay doesn't? Not even close to that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Stevens, a bunch of guys. Would you be shocked if any of these guys missed the cut either?
No, I mean, I guess Sam Stevens, just because he's been such a great cut maker, and he's the other guy that I guess I really do. I like his game. I think it's well suited for the course. But yeah, like, I don't know, Kiriyama hasn't shown us anything so far. Rasmus was just terrible last week, although that could be a pretty good play. I can't imagine he's going to
come back
with a ton of ownership this week.
Correct.
After that, so he could definitely be. I think Højgaard is somebody who potentially goes on to have a very good career on the PGA Tour. I think he's a name to watch. That could be one that is due for a bounce back. But yeah, I think Stevens for me is in play. He's missed like one cut over like the last 9-10 months or so, something along those lines. So I like him. I like your guy, Patrick Rogers. Three straight top tens here, coming off of a third place finish at Torrey here this last week. So I think that that is definitely encouraging. So those would be kind of my favorites. Anybody else that you're looking at in the ninth? Oh,
if you're thinking Rodgers is a slam dunk, let me just walk you through my last 10 years of my career in this business.
Didn't you play? Haven't you played him here at all, though? You must have played him here at least once or twice.
Maybe it's just it's overshadowed by all the horrible beats that I've taken with him, but
probably. But yeah, like, you know, like you were saying, there aren't a ton of amazing pivots. No. You know, that's what gets tough. I mean, I think you could make a pretty good case for Harry Hall there at 9,300.
Although he's kind of cooled off from
the last couple. Sure. Start. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. I would say, as you're grading players out this week, if they've struggled in their last couple starts at much tougher courses,
yeah,
you know, take a look at how they were playing before along the easier ones, because this is an easy course. So there's going to be a ton of scoring. You know, a guy like Harry Hall has just an absolute killer short game, so he's going to be able to sink a ton of putts. He's probably not going to get into a lot of trouble off the tee. So yeah, I think Hall would be the other guy in that lower range. I mean, I could get behind Hosler at 9,100. It doesn't seem like it'd be a bad course for him. Even Taylor Moore has been playing pretty well of late. So, you know, there's not a lot that I feel real excited about, but just a few at least playable names there.
Have you looked at the odds? They're pretty crazily terrible.
I'm sure there's nothing as far. They're not going to give you any sort of.
They're not giving us anything.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine that they would. I mean, they're gonna take the top 20 guys in this field and have them at, you know, 40-1 or less. Yep. And yep, that's what it looks like.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, you want to jump on Alex Smalley? You're going to get 35-1 at this point. I mean, it's. That's really thrilling, you know, yeah. Like CT Pan there at 50-1. I mean, it used to be that these weren't terrible weeks to bet. They used to actually have pretty fair numbers.
Right.
But now they've kind of drawn a line. Like anybody who they think has any kind of shot to win is going to be between like 25-40-1.
Yeah.
And they're going to have a ton of guys that are going to fit into that range. And even then, between 50-100-1, they're gonna squeeze everybody else. You're just not finding amazing numbers on guys at like 200-1 or 300-1. Like nobody who's even got a sniff of winning it this week is gonna be around those numbers. So yeah, they've tightened up a lot on Bovada and on BetUS a lot over the last, really, I would say like 3 years or so now.
8K range. I was surprised off the bat with Jake Knapp's price, but he also started at about 45-50-1 on the sports books, and that number came down almost immediately. I saw just a couple hours ago he was at 30-1.
Yep, that's what I'm seeing him now.
So obviously DraftKings had the price off his opening line. I think that's pretty good. For him, he seems pretty talented to be at 8,600 in this field. Lower is a decent play at 8,500. Smalley at 8,700. But other than that, not much. I guess on the other Højgaard, and I think it probably makes a lot of sense to maybe pair him too.
the stack of Højgaard team?
Yeah, I mean, why not? If the course fits one of them.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we saw Nikolai do some things. We kind of thought he'd have a bigger year last year and then didn't necessarily pan out so much, but super talented. Both of those guys are super talented players. I guess I wouldn't mind that. Guy who kind of stood out for me as I went through my first look was Grayson Sigg at 8,000. 3 of 3 here as far as making the cut, couple of top 20 finishes on my comp course tool over 16 events. He actually ranks around like 6th or 7th as far as guys who've got at least 10 starts or so. So I think that was pretty encouraging to see. So he was really the name cash game wise that stood out for me on the lower 8K range.
Who was at the top of your course comp model this week?
Remember? The top guy, let me pull it up here. I would say.
I'm just curious if ours was the same or similar.
Yeah, it's CT Pan is who's coming out for me on the top of mine. It's not a lot of starts either. So in 15 career starts, he's gained 1.561 strokes total per round, which is which is not bad. But yeah, I don't have a lot of the bigger names. Harry Hall ranks up there pretty well. Patrick Rogers is in the mix. Ben Griffin ranks pretty well. But yes, yeah, surprisingly, like Akshay is just okay. He's gained just under 0.7 strokes per round. Kitayama is about the same.
Well, sort by finishing position, because strokes gained aren't on some of the courses that Akshay has played on and done really well, right?
If it goes just by place number, yep, then Akshay does rank the highest for me.
Yeah,
as far as guys who have at least 10 starts. And then Patrick Rogers would be, looks like, yeah, Patrick Rogers would probably be next.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. That
crew. Yep. So, yeah, it's definitely trickier to use the tool this week. Because some weeks you're just going to get a ton of great data. But, yeah, a lot of these coastal tracks and tropical courses, we don't get the strokes gained numbers. So it gets a little bit more challenging to compare them accurately.
7K range, lot of options. I guess I would say, yeah, I do have quite a bit of exposure to the 7K range here. I got some Eric Van Ruyen's kind of a Mexico guy. He's had a lot of success in Mexico before. So I own him despite his form being really off right now. Chan Kim, Bridgman, Ryder, I own. One name that is interesting and we've seen win a couple of times throughout the years and who just had a nice outing for the first time in a while last week or 2 weeks ago is Antoine Rosner.
Oh, okay.
7,300. DP World Tour guy. Very high upside, very low downside.
Yeah, he's probably somebody that you've written up. Was he ever a crystal ball guy over the years?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, one of the many Euro players that's screwed us over at one point or another.
Right, when they come over the PGA Tour, but they win on the DP World Tour.
Yeah, which is usually what kills us.
Yep.
So yeah, there's a couple names. Carson Young's been pretty good here. He's another guy who has a fantastic short game. There's not a lot of tee to green courses where I like him much, but his short game usually works pretty well. Ryan Gerard at 7,600 has been playing pretty well this season. He's one who stood out for me there. Not a ton of other names in the lower end. I think we talked about a couple before we came on air. Matteo Manassero, another DP World Tour guy. He's been okay. He's made a couple of cuts, had a top 25 finish a few weeks back. Played all the way through the fall. I guess I kind of like that. So he's stayed relatively busy throughout the fall. Had a handful of top 10 finishes on the DP World Tour over there. 7,100, he seems a little bit cheaper than what I would have expected otherwise. So he's somebody who will make it for me this week, but it gets really challenging here below 7K. I guess we say this quite a bit, but in that lower end, there wasn't much that stood out. They really have to fill out these fields with a lot of names that you don't see around too much. And a lot of guys that just aren't going to make a lot of noise in any events this year. So it's going to be challenging if you're paying down.
Yeah, you're kind of looking for one thing that stands out, one catalyst, because you're often not going to have a guy who has good recent stats, good course comp numbers, good tournament history here, like we had last week. So you're kind of just grasping at straws, looking for one or maybe two things that interest you. I like Ventura down here at 7,300. I said, yeah, Sam Ryder. And then at 7,000, Matty Schmidt, I like a little bit at 7,000 too. Just some guys who have some upside potential, not necessarily consistent in the least bit, but maybe they're long off the tee. Maybe they've had some success at comp courses, something to go off of.
Yeah, and that's what's going to make this week really challenging, because if you look at the number of players that are below 7K, you've got 73 out of 132 guys that are under 7K this week, and I don't know that I will play any of them. Maybe I'll have like maybe one or two guys will find their way in there as I get all the way through my analysis. But yeah, that will make things more challenging. So if you want, I mean, you got Akshay at the top there, and I think we're both being on him, and I think he'll be massively owned. But it's going to be a challenge. You're going to need, if you're going to roster, you know, one or two guys in the 10K range and then a couple of guys in that 9K range, you're going to have to reach for a couple of these names on that lower 7K range and hope that some of these guys end up panning out. And the tricky thing is just trying to analyze their form relative to this course, because this course, it's so much easier than what we've seen over the last 4 weeks, that I wouldn't necessarily rule a guy out. Well, maybe he's had a couple rough events, but if one of them was at Torrey Pines and one of them was down at Scottsdale, I wouldn't necessarily say that, well, he's obviously out of form and he's not going to play well here in Mexico, because this is just so much easier of a course than what we've seen over the last 4 weeks. So you're going to have to take some risks this week as you build your player pool out, especially if you're building a lot of lineups.
Yeah, I would say if you're building a lot of lineups, I like including Akshay, but if you're just doing one single entry, I don't mind fading Akshay, because he's probably going to be owned by 40 or 50% of
the field. Yeah, on the GPP side. I'm guessing him even higher. He might be like a 60, 70% guy in cash games this week.
So that's not a bad fade if you're talking about single entry
GPP teams.
So
yeah, yep. Sure.
Yep. All right, Zachary, what else you got?
Not much, man. It's a quiet sports week. Like I said, they got NHL is off. Although, and I know you probably don't pay any attention to it at all, but this team tournament has turned out to be a little bit more exciting for rivalry's sake than I had anticipated. The NBA has certainly got to be taking some notes as far as trying to find ways to build interest after the I don't know if you caught any of the – did you catch any of the highlights from the USA-Canada game on Saturday night?
What do you think?
I don't – probably not, but I'm maybe no. You heard about what happened at the game.
I did not hear anything. Tell me.
So it was in – Canada, I think it was in Montreal. So Canada, obviously, they booed the national anthem to begin with. Classy.
Oh, there you go.
Within the first 9 seconds of the game, there were 3 fights in the first 9 seconds of the game. Like, dropped the gloves right off the whistle, dropped them again, went in, played in deep into Canada's fight again. So 3 within the first 9 seconds. And then just watching the highlights, it was super intense. Typically you see kind of all-star games, guys are kind of taking it easy, you know, making sure they don't get hurt. They were hammering the hell out of each other during the game. There was this was real rivalry hockey. It was pretty intense, and the U.S. ended up coming out on top, and now they're going to rematch again for the tournament championship on Thursday night, which Saturday had a lot of viewership. I think Thursday will probably have even more, especially after the way that game went down. So that was at least a little bit interesting, but there wasn't, this is definitely a dry time of year as far as sporting events is concerned. So pretty quiet on that side. This is usually the time of year when I actually come somewhat close to getting into shape, because I just have nothing else to do on the weekends. So
is the new set of Cobra Kai shows out.
Oh yeah, that just dropped last week. I think on Thursday or Friday. That's right. So the last. You get the last five episodes, I think. So you gotta savor it a little bit, because that's
it. Did you watch the first half of the episodes for this season?
We started watching the first part. So we watched, I think, the first like three or so episodes. Oh. And then we were kind of waiting for, I think we were waiting so we'd be able to like binge all of them kind of at once, going through the last season instead of just having like five and then you wait 4 months and then five and then you wait 4 months. So now we've got like all of them. So now we can just take like a week or two and enjoy them a little by little each day instead of having to wait it out. But hopefully, are you all caught up? You're 10 episodes in?
I got through the first batch of episodes. That the last episode of that first batch was very unpredictable. What I like about the show is you think you have it figured out. You think you know how it's going to turn out, and then it turns out different, which is unlike a lot of shows.
So you still have 10 episodes left then?
No. I got however many just came out, five or six.
Oh, yeah, there's five more. So it was five, five, and five, I think. Yeah, okay. So we've only watched the first few of the first set of five from the final season. So we have a ton left to watch, and we've just been kind of holding off. But, yeah, hopefully
it's a great show.
It's been fun. I had no idea they'd be able to stretch it out and make it last as long as they did. It's going on like 8 years now or something like that, which is just
crazy. Has it really? Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, this is like season six or seven, something like that. And they had a huge delay around like COVID and stuff too. So.
Wow. Time flies.
Yeah, it does. Like, both of those guys are, what's funny is Ralph Macchio is older now than Pat Morita was when he was in the original Karate Kid. And he looks like half his age. Like that's the.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, isn't that? Yeah, it's funny. Like,
my family has gotten into, I don't know if you've caught it on Prime, Pop Culture Jeopardy.
No.
Oh, it's so they run Pop Culture Jeopardy. And so we tune in on that. But it's funny how I always thought like my parents had this gap of knowledge during when me and my sister were growing up, where they had no idea what was going on in the pop culture world. And those were the years where we did. Like we were paying attention to everything when we were younger. And then now I have that gap from when my kids have been growing up. I have no idea what's going on within music these days. Oh. And I haven't watched hardly any shows and don't see really movies during this time because we're so damn busy with the kids and everything. And I understand why my parents had that gap of not, I was like, were you guys sleeping for like 20 years? But I like crush 80s and 90s questions on Pop Culture Jeopardy, but anything like not from nowadays, I'm out.
My dad maybe saw like 10 movies in the theater over like a 30-year period.
I know. I can relate.
Between me being like a little kid all the way up until he retired, from like 1980 through, 2011 or so.
Yep.
Yeah. He probably went to the movie theater like fewer than 20 times, I would think. I'd be almost sure to bet under 20 for him on going to the theater for stuff. So yeah, he would have been completely lost on any of that stuff. And now he'll go maybe once every week or so and see something, because he doesn't, gives him something to do at the little theater where they spend their winters and stuff. But yeah, it's a little bit the same. I guess there's certain areas where I am able to keep up pretty well, like on like current events and things. We have so much information just being on like Twitter. You scroll through there for a few minutes every day and you just get your fill of everything immediately, which is good and bad, I guess. But yeah, like music, I feel like I think what exacerbates the cut off in music is so much that you don't necessarily really listen to the radio anymore to get your music. You just have your streaming systems. You just build your own you know, your own playlists and things and filter your own music. So you're not always really getting in on like the new stuff. So whatever the Grammys are out, there's the people winning it. I'm like, I've never really listened to a lot of sort of stuff. See that has definitely changed things a little bit, but yeah, I haven't played with my kids. I think I would probably still roast them in most categories, but yeah, that is kind of funny. It is very similar to the sort of cutoff that they had at that age too.
They're pretty amazed when there's a category like 80s and 90s music or anything to do with sports. I obviously crush from that time period, but like that, even like NBA, I followed NBA really closely. Then I could name hockey players and I can't name any of that stuff now. I just, you know, you just kind of filter down to what, because time's so limited, you filter down to what you really want to watch and you just don't see everything that we saw. Because I feel like I watched every like NBA playoff game from those years in the 90s, right?
Well, you and I had a unique experience that we didn't have a lot of TV channels to choose from. Like,
well, there's that too.
You got cable. When did you guys get cable?
When I was going off to college.
Okay. Yeah. So we didn't get cable at my parents' house until I was already gone in college. At some point they broke down at that point. I don't even remember why. Maybe for internet purposes. That probably was what it was. So yeah, I mean, we only had, you know, a handful of actual channels that we could tune in. So sports was kind of the default as kids. Like we just watched the Twins every day. And even though, and they were, you know, they had the 87 and 91 where they won the series. Most of the other years they were kind of junk. They weren't great, but it was what you had to watch every day. You know, that was it. It was either that or, you know, whatever crappy network shows were going to be on. So that just sort of filtered our attention that way. Whereas now kids have, you know, 1,000 different things that they could watch at any particular moment. So now it's, I mean, you're pretty good getting your little guys to sit down and watch games and that kind of thing. But
yeah, but they just choose to watch YouTube videos.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
yeah.
absolutely my, oh my, it's mind numbing when I sit down and watch. I'm like, what are you guys watching? This is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's usually some idiot on YouTube doing something stupid.
Yeah, it's annoying, and they know who he is. They're like, "Oh, it's this certain person who's on there." You're like, it's bad that you know that.
Yeah, and they have 4 kajillion subscribers and followers and all this stuff. Like, who is following these people?
We're all these old, idiot kids. We're just getting old.
I hear that. Well, we'll get out of here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this week for the Mexico Open. Join us next week for the start of the Florida Swing. We got PGA National next week, and then we go right to Bay Hill, and then the Players a week after that. So,
Cool. It's good. Yeah, after this week, it picks up. We don't have a signature event next week, but super tough course. So I always enjoy that one.
Absolutely. If you want to hit us up in the Slack chat or on Twitter or email us. We're happy to answer any questions you have. With that, we'll leave you this week's event. Best of luck, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Good luck.